Last week we looked at some passages of Scripture in the Old and New Testament that talked about the new heaven and the new earth. And, you know, a lot of people think that this is just a revelation statement about the new heaven and the new earth. And we also found that Isaiah talked about the new heaven and the new earth in Isaiah chapter 65 and in chapter 66. We also find that the Hebrew writer in three different places makes reference to the new heaven and the new earth. So this, as John is talking about the new heaven and the new earth in the book of Revelation, this is something that the people were aware of. This was nothing new. And this goes back to something I've said throughout this entire study. A lot of what you see and read in Revelation, you have already seen and read about, particularly in the Old Testament, through the prophecies of the prophets and also through how God dealt with the people of those days. He's dealing with the people here in the very same manner. So it's even though this is a new writing by John, he's really not writing anything new. So that was one thing that I wanted to be sure that we completely understand as we finish up this study. Open to chapter 21, and I want us to begin reading and breaking down the scripture of chapter 21. Let's begin, first of all, in reading verses 1 through. I think I read this last week. Let's read it again to familiarize ourselves with the scriptures and then break it down. Then I saw a new heaven and a new earth. For the first heaven and the first earth had passed away, and the sea was no more. I saw the holy city, New Jerusalem, coming down out of heaven from God, prepared as a bride adorned for her husband. And I heard a loud voice from the throne saying, Behold, the dwelling place of God is with man, and he will dwell with them, and they will be his people, and God himself will be with them as their God. He will wipe away every tear from their eyes, and death shall be no more, neither shall there be mourning, nor crying, nor pain any more, for the former things have passed away. And he who was seated on the throne said, Behold, I am making all things new. Also he said, Write this down, for these words are trustworthy and true. And he said to me, It is done. I am the Alpha and the Omega, the beginning and the end. To the thirsty I will give from the spring of the water of life without payment. The one who conquers will have this heritage, and I will be his God, and he will be my son. But as for the cowardly, the faithless, the detestable, as for the murderers, the sexually immoral, the sorcerers, the idolaters, and all liars, their portion will be in the lake that burns with fire and sulfur, which is the second death. Okay. We find here that everything is becoming new, isn't it? And there is tremendous change that has taken place in heaven and on earth. The old is passing away, and all things are becoming new. You know, there is a parallel of that of the Apostle Paul when he talks about becoming a Christian. You know, he talks about in becoming a child of God, you put away what? The old man. You put away the old man, and you put on the new one, which tells us that as Christians, all things change. Now, of course, John is writing to Christians, isn't he? And they already know this. They already know the change that comes through Christianity. We have to understand that as Christians today, that if we are going to put on the cloak of Christianity, that there has to be some major changes taking place in our lives. The things that we would attach ourselves to, which would be worldly things, can no longer be attached to. We have to set those things aside. As Paul said, we're putting it away. We're getting rid of it. It's like taking out the trash. We throw it away and we begin to develop characteristics of a new person. Those who lived a life of hate will now live a life of love. Those who lived a life of violence will now live a life of goodness and patience. So you see, it's turning on right the opposite to put on something new, because when that which is old, of course, things, and we all have things that are old and they're all worn out, and usually they're ready to be thrown into the trash. They have been used so much, and you know, it's sort of like, and a lot of you can relate to this. You have your favorite chair at home, okay, and you sit in that favorite chair for years and years and years, and it kind of sags where you sag, and it kind of bends where you bend, and it's very comfortable, isn't it? But then it gets to the point to where it's lost its usefulness, and you have to get something that is new. And generally, new things do not fit as well as that which was old. And we have to adjust ourselves to something that is new. And the same thing is true with Christianity. Now, everyone who are Christians, we are Christians because we want to be Christians, right? We want to follow God. We want His love and devotion. We want the salvation that comes from being a child of God. And we all want that, and we wanted it the day we became a Christian. But when we became a Christian, we had to realize that, you know, I've got to make some changes as well. It's a two-way street. God does His part in our salvation, and we must do our part in our salvation. We've got to make changes and adjustments that fall in line with being brand new. And I think that this is something that John is trying to explain to the Christians here. This is going to be some major changing. Everything now is becoming new. It's going to be better. It's going to be wonderful. But it's something that you have to change to. Christianity is something you have to change. Even if it means giving up some things that you think you love and you think you have to have in life, and you give it up for something that is far better. John sees the new heaven and the new earth. He sees the old heaven and the old earth passing away. He sees the sea passing away. He sees the holy city coming down, and it is prepared as a bride would prepare herself for her husband. It is something that is beautiful. Verses 3 and 4, he talks about the tabernacle. The tabernacle of God is with men. He will dwell with them. They shall be His people. And God Himself will be with them and be their God. Now, this is a new concept here. God has never been able to be with man. Why? Because of sin. Right. Exactly. Right. Exactly. Man's... Yes, sir. He did. And again, that refers back to something of old. God separated Himself from man in the Garden of Eden when sin entered into the world. God cannot be in the presence of sin, will not be in the presence of sin. And because there is sin in the lives of men, God separated Himself from man. Actually, man separated himself from God. We can go back to Isaiah 59 and read the correct way that should be said. God's ear is not deaf that He cannot hear, nor is His hand shortened that it cannot save. But we have separated ourselves from God. It's our iniquities that have caused this barrier to be placed between God and man. It was a barrier that the old law could not repair. because the old law was a law of condemnation. It was not a law of salvation. This was something that only Jesus Christ could repair. And it will not be completely repaired until Judgment Day. Questions, comments on that? Oh, pardon. Isaiah 59, verses 1 and 2. Yes. Okay. Then he starts talking about some things that God is going to do for us in verses 3 and 4. And this is something that every person that has breathed the breath of life has had to happen to them. And it is something that no one enjoys. At least, you know, I don't think they do. I've never met anyone that enjoys sorrow and death and crying and pain. God will wipe away every tear from their eyes. There will be no more death. There will be no more sorrow. There will be no more pain. For the former things have passed away. And what he means by this is simply saying the former things have passed away is simply saying that all of the things of life, earthly life, that has caused death, that has caused sorrow, that has caused crying, that has caused pain, they're gone. Where are they now? They have been thrown into the lake of fire. We read that in chapter 20. Everything that causes trouble and problems in life in chapter 20 was thrown into the lake of fire. All that is left is the righteousness of the people of God. So there is no need for any reason to cry because those who cause tears have vanished. They're gone. Those who cause death, they're gone. Wouldn't it be wonderful to get up one morning and everything that causes problems in your life is gone? Wouldn't that be wonderful? It hasn't happened for me yet. I don't think it hadn't happened for anyone yet, has it? John is saying, okay, it's here. Now we're looking into the future now. We're seeing the future here. This is the way it's going to be in heaven. Everything that is an abomination, and we'll read in chapter 21 and verse 12, the things that are not going to be there, and because these are the things that are detestable, the things that causes the problems. All of these things have passed away. They're gone. There is nothing there now that's going to make you cry. There is nothing there now that is going to cause death and sorrow. It should be. Yes, it should be. Those comforting verse. And the reason for that is because it's something that no one has ever experienced. Now, we have all experienced joy, haven't we? And we have all experienced pleasure. But we have never experienced total joy and total pleasure, have we? And the only way to achieve total joy and total pleasure is to have the absence of all of these things that create sorrow and pain. That's the only way to accomplish that. And this is what John is saying, this is what's happening now. All those things that cause the disruptions of life, they're not going to happen. All right. Verses 5 through 8 comes for the one who sits on the throne. He says, "Behold, I make all things new." Now this excites people to get something brand new. We get a new car. We're excited about that. Because it's something we haven't had in a while. And we enjoy having something new. We move into a new home. We're excited about that. There are a lot of things that excite us. And, you know, even down to a new pair of shoes may excite some folks. It does Mandy. Okay, I hadn't thought of that one. New coins, yeah. You know, over the in the last several years, when they minted the state coins on the quarters, I used to get so excited to get my first state of whatever, you know, because for a long time we actually did the route. We got the map, you know, that we could stick the quarters in, you know, when the kids were small when they started doing this, and we would get so excited when we got our first Massachusetts, or we got our first Illinois, or we got our first Alabama, and that was really exciting when we got our Alabama, let me tell you. That was, and it was brand new. And then they came out with color. The coins were in color. Did y'all see those? We couldn't afford those. Those were more than a quarter. But they were beautiful. And that was just so exciting to do that at our house, to get the new quarters. And I hadn't thought about that, Linda. That's... That might be a sermon right there. thank you. Most of us have seen the new 100. I'll chase a rabbit here for a second. Most of y'all have seen the new $100 bills, and they're amazing. You know, you haven't seen one. They are absolutely amazing because of the things. There's so many hidden things about this bill that it's almost impossible to counterfeit and do it correctly. And we were at the J.E.'s restaurant in Leesburg a few weeks ago, and I went to pay for the bill, and I pulled out one of those new $100 bills, and the lady looked at it, and I made the most horrible mistake. And she was looking at it. I could tell she'd never seen one before, but she was just giving it this, and I said, "I just made that today." And she handed it back. She says, "I can't take this." I said, no, I really just got this from the bank. It's one of the new $100 bills. I've never seen this before, sir. I can't take this, you know. And she wasn't going to take it. And then the manager comes up and she looks at it and says, "Yeah, that's one of the new $100 bills. I saw one the other day at the bank. It's fine, you know." So I was able to pay for my meal. But some folks don't like the new $100 bills because they are so different, you know. And they have so many safety features to keep you from counterfeiting. I don't know why I told that, but just, anyway. All right. All things are new. And we get excited about new things. And I would imagine that whoever John is talking to here has got to be excited. Because they have had so many problems for so long. And now everything is going to be new. And then he says, "Write, for these words are true and faithful. It is done." Now, what does it mean when someone says it is done? Everything's finished. Can't add to it. Okay. We carry our car into the mechanic to get it worked on, you know, and we wait because we have come attached to that little piece of machinery and we need it. And so we call and they finally say, "It is done." Last time I carried my car to have it worked on, they told me it is done. And I got a half mile down the road and had to take it back. It wasn't done after all. Something else was wrong with it, you know. And those things happen when we say it's done, doesn't it? What does it mean when God says it's done? It's done. It's done, yeah. It is done. I am the Alpha. I am the Omega. I am the beginning. I am the end. I am going to give of the fountain of the water of life freely to him who thirsts. Now, where have we heard this before? Jesus is the woman at the well, yeah. "He who overcomes shall inherit all things." This is important. Listen to that again. "He who overcomes inherits all things." What happens to that one that don't overcome? He doesn't inherit, does he? Exactly. There is no once saved, always saved, is there? No. We have to remain on track. I will be his God. He shall be my son. All right. Now, verse 8. Let me read that again. But as for the cowardly, the faithless, the detestable, the murderers, the sexually immoral, the sorcerers, the idolaters, and all liars will have their part in the lake that burns with fire and sulfur or brimstone, which is the same thing depending on what version you read, which is the second death. These are the ones that causes the crying and the pain and the sorrow and the death. Right? As for them, they're not going to be around, are they? That's what's going to make everything new, because they're not going to be here to torture you and to give you the problems that you have in life. And that's why everything's going to be new. All right. Questions so far? All right. Well, let's read 9 through 21. Then came one of the seven angels who had the seven bowls full of the seven last plagues and spoke to me, saying, Come, I will show you the bride and the wife of the Lamb. And he carried me away into the Spirit into a great high mountain and showed me the holy city Jerusalem coming down out of heaven from God, having the glory of God, its radiance like a most rare jewel, like jasper, crystal, and clear as crystal. And it had a great high wall with 12 gates and the gates, 12 angels on the gates, and the name of the 12 tribes of the sons of Israel were inscribed. On the east, 3 gates, the north, 3 gates, the south, 3 gates, the west, 3 gates. And the wall of the city had 12 foundations, and upon them were the 12 names of the 12 apostles of the Lamb. And the one who spoke with me had a measuring rod and measured the city and the gates and the walls. And the city lies 4 square. Its length was the same as its width, and the measure of the city of the rod were 12,000 stadia. Its length and width and height are equal. He also measured its wall, 144 cubits by human measurement, which was also by angel's measurement, which was built of jasper. The city was pure gold, clear as glass. The foundations of the wall of the city was adorned with every kind of jewel. I won't read the list of names. And the 12 gates were 12 pearls, and each of the gates made of a single pearl. And the city of the street was pure gold, transparent as glass. Wow. Can you imagine a place like this? Now, I had a man ask me a question once, and I had to really stop and think about this. Do you really think there's going to be a street of gold up there? Do you really think there's going to be all of these precious stones and these jewels and these things that we identify with here on earth? Okay. I think you're absolutely right. We need to understand God is not physical. God is a spirit. We, as spiritual beings, are dual identities. We are physical here in this life. When we cross that border into eternity after this life, we leave the physical behind. We know that. It turns back to what? Dust. We, the spiritual part, will continue. Now, like Lewis is saying here, The only tool that John really has to work with in describing what he's seen is physical things. He has no way of really giving a genuine estimate of what he's looking at because he's never seen anything like that before. He don't know how to describe what he's seen. He just knows it's beauty beyond compare and wonderfulness beyond compare. So he has to some way explain this in terms that we can understand. And we all understand gold, don't we? We all know what that is. We know how valuable it is and how precious it is. We know what jasper is. We know what pearls are. We know what all of these gems are worth and their beauty and their value. And that's how he's describing it to us. I'm going to be honest with you. I don't care if it's gold up there or not. If I get through those gates, that's all that matters to me. I will be surprised to step onto a street of physical gold. I don't think that's what I'm going to do. Because I will not be physical in heaven. I will be a spirit, as God is a spirit. But this was the only way that John had to really explain what heaven would be like. Exactly. It's going to be better than what we have here. And that's the only way to look at it. The only way to look at it. Okay? And that's a valid point. Yeah. I think the idea, of course, in describing heaven like this was to get the Christian to understand just how wonderful it's going to be. And that's the only thing we can relate with. Right. Okay. You know, I think that the true Christian will not look for these things. The true Christian knows that the value of these things is nothing compared to what God has for us. Physical, spiritual, or what matter, whatever we can bring into our mind what heaven will be like, it's going to be far better than that. I had one person tell me that heaven to him was being up there, and if he wants a Krispy Kreme donut, he can go get one. That was heaven. You know, because he ain't supposed to have one down here because he's a diabetic, and he told me that. He said, so when I get to heaven, the first thing I want to do is go get me a Krispy Kreme donut. You know. That's heaven to him. Being able to do something he can't do here. You know. People today may think heaven's full of TVs and iPods and cell phones, you know, because they value them more than they do the Bible. You know, read my article in the bulletin and you'll know what I'm talking about. Right, and that was probably more important to the people that were reading this for the first time than the gold and the silver and all the precious things that are going to be there, to realize that they're not going to be subjected to persecution any longer. They're not going to be subjected to sorrow and death any longer, that everything is going to be a utopia. You know. Life was a utopia with Adam and Eve to begin with in the Garden of Eden. There was no gold and silver there. And yet their life was absolutely perfect. So that tells me you don't have to have these things to live a perfect life. So. Right. And I think it won't be to the real Christian. You know, but it was John's only way of describing just how great it's going to be. And the same thing with when he talks about the measurement of the city and the gates and the wall, you know, we decided that last week when we talked about this, that the city, the height, the length, and the breadth is some 1,500 miles, which would cover about half of the United States. If you can imagine a cube that is as long as half the United States and as tall as half the United States and as wide as half the United States, you know, that is a huge piece of property when you stop and think about it. And we can't imagine anything like that, can we? No. But that was his way of telling us how big this place is going to be. And you're right. You're absolutely right. All right. A good question. Yeah. What is it? Is it Einstein's theory that says two objects of mass can't occupy the same space? I wonder if that'll be true in heaven. Yeah. All right, verses 22 through 27. I saw no temple in the city, for the temple of the Lord God, the Almighty, and the Lamb. The city has no need of the sun or moon to shine in it, for the glory of God gives it light. Its lamp is the Lamb. Its light will the nations walk, and the kings of the earth will bring their glory into it. The gates will never be shut by day, and there will be no night there. They will bring into it the glory, the honor of the nations. But nothing unclean will ever enter it, nor anyone who does that which is detestable or false, but only those who are written in the Lamb's Book of Life. Now, let's look at this for a second. The city will have no need of the sun or the moon to shine, for the glory of God gives its light and the light of the Lamb. Its gates will never be shut by day, and there will be no night there. Why is that important? Okay, there will be no darkness there. Now, there's an underlying importance here. When do most crimes happen? Yeah. Under the shade of darkness. You're right, Linda. We have people who are bold today that will do it in the daytime. And that's getting more prevalent. But for the most part, and particularly in the day that this was written, most things that was questionable happened at night. This darkness. Well, it is related to his darkness. Right. Right. And that's one of Satan's titles, is the Prince of Darkness. And there will be no darkness there. There will be no night there. Which simply means there will be no need to hide. There will be no need to lock your doors. There will be no need to, you know, keep your shotgun in your corner loaded and ready to go. Which a lot of us do that, don't we? All of this will be unnecessary now. Verses 22 and 23, the temple of the Lord Almighty and the Lamb, it will be the light. It will be illuminated by their glory. And nothing that defiles or causes an abomination or a lie shall enter in. Only those whose names are written in the Lamb's Book of Life. And I want to talk some more about the Lamb's Book of Life in the next chapter. And we're not going to get into 22. I see that now. We will finish this study next week with chapter 22.